from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We are talking about social media shaming this hour, and our connection was made in November of 2013 when a couple of college students at Furman University in South Carolina released a new app called Yik Yak. They explained that Yik Yak would be an anonymous bulletin board where people within a 10-mile radius can post anything they like. What's the point? Well, the students explained that it was designed to get other people in the know about what's going on at a given moment. It became particularly popular on college campuses. But when you combine social media with anonymity, you can imagine the results. In December, students at the college at Brockport organized a demonstration centered around the Black Lives Matter theme. On Yik Yak, some anonymous posters spewed racist comments. We're going to read some examples in just a moment here. Now, college president John Halstead sent a letter to the founders of Yik Yak asking them to modify the app or shut it down. He called the Yik Yak atmosphere potentially toxic. He blasted the racist posters as cowards for hiding behind anonymity. But let's stress something here. The college at Brockport is not alone. The University of Rochester will be asking the Monroe County District Attorney's Office to subpoena information from Yik Yak to identify students believed to have been responsible for posting racially offensive and threatening language. The New York Times reports that professors at Eastern Michigan University have considered hiring lawyers, saying that students sitting in their own classrooms are harassing and defaming them in language that is often crude or misogynistic. But there's been no trail to follow. Yik Yak protects its users' identities. That's not always the case on Twitter. Some people post their own identities. And social media vitriol on Twitter has recently gotten one man fired, another suspended from his college. Former baseball star Curt Schilling posted a congratulations to his 17-year-old daughter, who had been accepted to her college of choice. Schilling was shocked to receive numerous tweets containing sexually aggressive language, including several threats of rape. He decided to find out who was sending the worst of the tweets and demand apologies. For the men who apologized, he left them alone. Two did not apologize. Schilling contacted an employer of one of them, Sean McDonald, and Sean McDonald was fired. The other was a college student named Adam Nagel. He has since been suspended from his student. It seems there are questions about what kind of behavior is acceptable, what is simply rude, what might be illegal. We welcome your comments this hour, and let me welcome our panel. Mary Ellen Zuckerman is the provost at the College at Brockport. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Imani Lawrence is a Brockport student and one of the founders of the movement there. Imani, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Mike Johansson is a social media strategy consultant, a lecturer at RIT, frequent guest here helping us see the social media landscape. Mike, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
I want to go back to that December incident first, and Imani, if I could, just a little bit of context. We've seen different Black Lives Matter events around the country, particularly in the wake of some of the events surrounding Ferguson, Staten Island, et cetera, last year. What was happening in December at Brockport?
So in December, we had just found out about the no indictment after the Eric Garner case.
Yeah, the lack of indictment there, yep.
Mm-hmm. And so essentially what happened was that all of us were very upset and we didn't know what to do. So one of the other people who ended up being a founder of the movement, she pulled a couple of us aside and said, you know what, let's just do a protest, show our solidarity. U of R is doing some things, other schools in the area are doing some things, let's also do some things. And so we grabbed a bunch of students together. And what people don't realize is actually the protest happened over the course of 2 days. Mm-hmm. And so on Yik Yak and actually in person too on campus, we started getting some racist feedback the Thursday, but that Friday, December 5th is when everything kind of blew up. And we did two protests that day, and Yik Yak was just on fire with a lot of racist comments. We also received a lot of in-person comments too, arguing with people on campus, people yelling at us from the windows, things like that. But some of the worst comments came from Yik Yak. People saying they're going to come running through with the Confederate flag and stuff like that.
Let me read a couple if I could. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to, because I cannot read the worst of them. Mm-hmm. But let me read several of the Yik Yak comments that appeared during these protests at the college at Brockport. White power, long live the South, reads one. And then another in the same vein, talking about the protest. Is this really going on? I'll be there with my lynching boots on.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be there with my lynching boots on. Then somebody else writes, Blacks have to stop bringing up slavery. It's blanking over. Has no effect on you now, and your race wasn't the only people that were enslaved. Goes on again to talk about lynching boots. Mm-hmm. When you hear lynching boots, Iman, and that's just some of the examples. I can't even read the worst of it.
Yeah.
When you hear lynching boots, what do you think?
we perceived it as a threat, especially because most of us are in that age where our parents were kind of coming up in like the 60s and 70s, grandparents, and these are things that have not been, the effect of them haven't been lost on us. So we still understand the meaning of it, the significance, and they mean a lot more to us than what I'm assuming the people making those comments thought they would mean. And it really bothered a lot of us. A lot of us were really shaken up about it, honestly. And that's even with the context of us knowing that we were gonna get a lot of backlash, we still were very surprised and very hurt. And it was just, everything kind of stopped when someone read that, and all of us screenshotted it on our phones, and everything kind of stopped. And we were just like, we have to talk about this right now.
So. And like I said, that is hardly the only place the University of Rochester has mm-hmm. seen some similar kinds. I don't know any college that right now that probably wouldn't. I mean, Mike Johansson, I look around the country. The New York Times just wrote a big story on this. Eastern Michigan has professors who felt like they had to hire attorneys to try to press defamation charges, but then found out we don't even have a trail to follow here. These students are sitting in my classroom writing horrendous stuff, and the professors felt helpless. What do you make of the app? Mm.
Well, the app itself, it's like all things, it's like all tools, you know, it can be used for good or for bad. Unfortunately, I think the people who want to say things and cower behind anonymity find this the perfect venue. It's the same kind of people who write on bathroom walls. You know, it's really a way to spew ideas that they would be afraid to say, for the most part, I think, face-to-face to someone.
Mm. And so let me ask Mary Ellen Zuckerman now, looking at what happened in December, what was the college's first response?
Well, our first response, of course, was we were horrified. And I would say that was true for certainly the president, the administrative people, staff, and faculty. And there was a meeting called December 19th, I think, faculty, staff, and students, some graduate students. And again, of course, this was the end of the semester. But there were, I think, over 90 people there, and just kind of digging into this, what does it mean? I think both the Yik Yak, which many of the faculty and staff really weren't familiar with and didn't understand.
Nor was I until recently.
Right? Yes, yeah. Right. So, you know, it's a generational thing. But also, I think that the Yik Yak comments were so offensive and so horrifying, that some of our students would say those things. We're very proud of the students who were doing the protests. They were trying to reach out, be part of a larger national dialogue. And then to have some of our students, and again, it's anonymous. You don't really know who it is. You don't know if it's one person, three. But to have any of our students doing that was really horrifying. So there was a lot of soul searching. And we have really viewed this as an opportunity to kind of take a multi-pronged approach to looking at how we're handling a diverse population, making sure that our students who are of color and other ethnic groups feel comfortable and safe on campus. And then there's the other group of our students who are the ones who might be making these comments on Yik Yak or in person, as Imani said, and showing extreme ignorance and cowardice, not willing to say these things in person, we have a responsibility to educate them. They're in our classes. They're at Brockport. We need to raise their awareness and help them learn how to have civil dialogue, respectful dialogue with people who are different. So it's been horrifying. And again, we the president came out very strongly with a letter, as you said, to the founders of Yik Yak. We are monitoring it. And again, we're part of a national conversation about how to handle that social media piece of it. But as a college, there are broader issues. And we're actually, we see it as an opportunity to keep talking about the social issues as well as the particular social media.
Has Yik Yak responded to the president's letter?
No, not to this point. They have not to us. And
are you disappointed about that?
I think the president and all of us are very disappointed. We would have liked to see a statement that they would take down speech that was hateful. There has been a response on college this week. It's kind of a take back Yik Yak movement. And we've had students, our Center for Prevention and Outreach and our student government have done things where they're trying to address the issue of social media, but they're also going on to Yik Yak. And the students, for example, who are reaching out and saying they're lonely or they feel depressed, they're trying to put up positive messages. Here's a suicide hotline, or here's where you can get help. So they're trying to take to be proactive, to take control of the social media in a positive way. And that's something that they're doing all of this week. So our students, we're very proud of our students. They're very proactive. They're trying to come up with solutions. Imani's group has been working hard. They just did a 2-day workshop on raising awareness, and they're coming forward next week with some recommendations, solutions. Are these other students doing this, raising awareness about Yik Yak? So we're trying to keep the discussion open.
Well, Mike Johansson, my understanding is that even though Yik Yak has not yet responded to the College of Brockport, there have been other incidents in other places, Colgate, for example. And from what we've seen so far, going back, I mean, Yik Yak still being a young app, but in the past year, what have the founders said, for example, take Colgate? What do we know about that?
Well, they wouldn't release information on the people who had posted, but to get into the category of discomforting the comforted, like I've said many times on the show, nothing you post online is truly anonymous. And when you sign up for Yik Yak, you're giving out your phone number. So nothing is truly anonymous, and the bottom line here is that there have been a couple of cases where the act on Yik Yak, or what was said on Yik Yak, was considered criminal, and Yik Yak has revealed the identity. In fact, a few students have been thrown out of universities because they made like bomb threats, terrorist threats, that kind of thing. So you're not truly anonymous, number one. I think part of the issue, as you say, it's a very young app. It may still only be a two, four, five person team. They're probably working off a little venture capital. They probably don't have the resources to do large data pulls. And I think it's just a matter of time before a court forces them to reveal the identity of someone who posted something hateful.
So they have at least acknowledged that the really extreme stuff that might be criminal, they'll work with authorities on that.
I think given in their ideal world, they would never have to do this, but I think they've had to acknowledge that criminal behavior, at least, is something that has to be dealt with.
But Provost Zuckerman, when you see someone say, I'll be there with my lynching boots on, I guess that becomes a subjective question over whether that's actually a threat and potentially criminal.
Right, and I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but my understanding is, I mean, as intimidating and horrifying as that is, I think for it to rise to a level, it has to be more specific as to who they're actually going to go and lynch. I think that's my understanding.
Boy, it just shakes you to think that you can say that and sort of get away with it. But Mary Ellen also mentioned, Mike, that there have been a response movement, students and faculty saying, all right, let's flood the zone with positive messages, et cetera. And that has been a tactic you've seen elsewhere as well?
Sure. They did that at Colgate last fall. And it was a group of faculty who were kind of horrified that this representation of Colgate was showing up on Yik Yak. And so collectively, they decided they would take times of the day where they'd be responsible for looking at Yik Yak and responding in a positive way or saying positive things about the Colgate community.
If you wonder if that can work, some people may say, well, does that really counterbalance it? Does it have an impact? You know who says it works? Monica Lewinsky, a TED Talk that I think is new this month.
Yes, March 10th.
March 10th has gone viral. Monica Lewinsky, former White House intern at the center of that scandal in 1998. Haven't seen much of her over the years, and she says it's finally time for her to talk. She's 42 now. She gave a TED Talk about internet shaming, and she described herself as the first real victim of widespread internet shaming. She's talking about emails, comments, forum comments, anonymous comments from around the world through online communities that attacked her. And let's listen to part of that TED Talk from Monica Lewinsky when she talked about the impact of what she was hearing and ways to fight back against social media and internet shaming.
I was branded as a tramp, tart, slut, whore, bimbo. The public humiliation was excruciating. Life was almost unbearable. I've seen some very dark days in my life. It was the compassion and empathy from my family, friends, professionals, and sometimes even strangers that saved me. Even empathy from one person can make a difference. In the online world, we can foster minority influence by becoming upstanders. To become an upstander means, instead of bystander apathy, we can post a positive comment for someone or report a bullying situation. Trust me, compassionate comments help abate the negativity. We can also counteract the culture by supporting organizations that deal with these kinds of issues, like the Tyler Clementi Foundation in the US. In the UK, there's Anti-Bullying Pro. And in Australia, there's Project Rocket.
That's Monica Lewinsky, just sort of briefly talking about her experience. But I encourage you to watch the entire TED Talk. And I, Mike, I was surprised myself, as riveted as I was, by what she said. But I think a lot of people are responding to it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it. She has a lot of credibility, obviously, in this space. She's now 42. A lot of time has passed since she was the subject of so much talk and so forth. And I think, you know, her perspective is interesting. And I think the whole idea of being an upstander is it could be that moment in time where people suddenly say, you know what, enough is enough. I can't just let this slide. And I've seen this a little bit on Facebook in the past year. I've seen people sharing things by a certain politician who's now declared as a Republican candidate recently. People would just let someone they know on Facebook post this stuff. Accurate, inaccurate, untruthful, unfair, whatever it was, and they would just ignore it on Facebook. Now I see people jumping in and commenting and saying, you know what, this is not true. Here's a link to the truth.
Imani, when you hear about that reaction, instead of being a bystander, being an upstander, that's the first time I've heard that term. Mike, have you heard that term before, by the way?
Not before her talk, no.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that either. It's an interesting idea. Is that a first step to counterbalancing the negativity you're hearing, for example, on Yik Yak, Imani?
I think so. I think that is definitely a first step. The issue with Yik Yak, though, is that you can often feel overwhelmed because you can make a comment and you'll be the only person making a comment. And because people are not afraid to post whatever they want to say, you'll get a lot of backlash even after that from other people or possibly the same person, we don't know. So it often can be a little bit scary to do that on Yik Yak, but that's definitely something that me and the rest of the people that I'm friends with and that I associate with, we do that all the time in person and online, you know, especially if it's in a topic that we have information about, we often correct them saying, this is problematic, here's the reasons why. But Yik Yak, I've noticed recently, even just a little bit before the Take Back Yik Yak, that more people are kind of jumping on and saying, what you're saying is wrong, you know, you shouldn't say these things about people, educate yourself, things like that. I've noticed a slight trend in it even before the Take Back Yik Yak campaign started.
And I was just going to jump in on the other thing that happened at Colgate was that these faculty, they weren't just posting things, they were also upvoting the positive things, which on Yik Yak is very important. When you see something has been upvoted by 20 people, that means there's a lot of people believe this statement is accurate.
Mm-hmm. So that's another. That's the same as liking or retweeting kind of?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. See, I'm trying. I'm trying to keep up with it. It's really remarkable. And frankly, Mike has counseled us on this program many times that as soon as we think we are caught up to date with some sort of social media, there's a new platform out there. And it is hard to keep up. But Mike, from what you have seen, how popular is Yik Yak?
Well, obviously they didn't release numbers. I know at RIT we believe there's roughly 20% of the student body is on it.
Wow.
Whether they're
wow.
active or not is another. But we believe about 20%, which, you know, at a tech school, I suppose, is...
I think that's a lot.
Yeah, but I would say, you know, on Facebook, we're probably at about 85-90%. On Twitter, we're probably at about 50-60%. So yeah. It's relatively smaller.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about social media shaming, the appropriate response to dealing with especially anonymous vitriol that we have seen at the College of Brockport in December. University of Rochester's dealt with it. College campuses across the country are grappling with a new app called Yik Yak, which is anonymous. And so we're talking about that and seeing some of the response in our community with Mary Ellen Zuckerman, the provost at the College of Brockport. Imani Lawrence is a Brockport student and one of the founders of The Movement at the College of Brockport. Mike Johansson is a social media strategy consultant and a lecturer at RIT. If you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255. 8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Mary Ellen brought up an interesting response to, if we only knew who were posting these comments. Some people say, throw them out, get them off campus, whoever they are, shame them, you know, return it in kind tenfold, etc. Mary Ellen, your first comment was, though, if you could find out who they are, you'd want to sit down with them and work with them and try to educate them.
I would want to see if they're a danger. If they're a danger to anyone on the campus, obviously
sure.
We don't want them on the campus. But if they are ignorant or uneducated.
And I suspect most of them are making flippant remarks.
Yes.
Because it's a very different thing when you're protected online to say outrageous things.
That's exactly right. And then what I think I think there's two sides to the equation. One is that the students who are making those comments need to understand what it is that they're doing, what the effect is, how using the word, for example, lynching affects somebody like Imani and her friends and her family, and what's the context, what's the history, why is that not just offensive, but so powerfully, historically offensive. And then get them to think critically about why are you thinking this? A, why do you think it's okay to say this? You don't want them saying it. It's not civil discussion, which the president is very big on, is civil conversations. But you don't even want them thinking that. I mean, they're there for an education. We have a responsibility to educate them. For the students who are on the other side receiving some of these very horrifying Yik Yak posts, not only do we want to make them feel safe and protected, but also possibly give them tools, whether it be this upstanding or other tools to protect them from offensive social media messages. How do you either, not look at it, put it out of your mind, deal directly with it, but then move on so that they don't feel victimized, that they feel that they are a full part of the community. So I think it's really, as an educational institution, it's our responsibility to keep all our students safe, but then try to understand how best to educate all of our students. And we're trying to do that in a multi-pronged way, both in the classroom, and we're really working on that, and then in programming outside the classroom. But all the students have to be in the classes. That's why they're there. So we want the faculty to be trained and able to understand these issues and be able to facilitate conversations.
Yeah. Imani, let me ask you this. If you could find out the identity of the person who posted, if this is really going on right now, then I'll be there with my lynching boots, or white power, long live the South, for example, among the even more offensive Yik Yak comments that I can't even read on this program. If you could find out who was doing it, whether it's one person or five or 10 or whatever, and you, as the provost mentioned, if you could ascertain that they were saying terrible things but not with an intention of actually hurting anybody, do you think they should be thrown off campus? Do you think that they should lose a scholarship? Or would you want to sit down and have a dialogue with them? What's the appropriate response?
I think there should be a series of steps, because sometimes people do say things out of ignorance. Even with me being angry about the things that are being said, I understand that sometimes they come out of ignorance because you genuinely don't know that what you're saying is that offensive. You know, some people, they say things that, like, they know is going to hurt someone's feelings, but they don't realize the depth of it. And with people like that, I feel like the first step would be to try to educate them and sit down with them and really, like she said, explain the context of these things and where they come from and why they're so offensive and why they're oppressive. And from there, you know, maybe take other steps. So if that intervention isn't working, then maybe something else.
But you're not saying first and foremost, you're out of here.
Absolutely not. Because then after that, what happens? What happens to them? You know, you've pretty much just given them more ammo to keep doing and saying the exact same things, possibly with more vigor now, you know, because they're angry and no one's told them why they're wrong. They just said, you're wrong. You did something bad. You did something that we don't like. That's what it seemed like. You did something that we don't like, so we're just going to kick you out. And I feel like that shouldn't be the first step. I feel like if that person, especially if once confronted, expresses like an interest in really understanding what's going on, or has a way to be like intervened and corrected first, you don't kick someone out of school for that, because then they'll never learn. I feel like that should be a last step when that person becomes a threat or a danger to students around them, because ultimately you have to weigh the interests of one or two students versus a whole group of other students who are paying to be there and who are feeling ostracized. So I feel like those factors have to be weighed first. And sometimes sending someone to some workshops or making them sign up for extra courses is enough. And sometimes it's not. And you have to take that on a case-by-case basis.
Let me tell you something, Imani. When I think about students at the College of Brockport, I am not going to think of the people writing the yik yak comments that we're talking about. I'm going to think about the remarkable and the generous comments you just made about them. That is a much more generous approach to your fellow students, or maybe one student, we don't know, than they're affording you. But I think it's also wise. Let's take a very short break. We're going to come back and look at some of the broader context, because as Imani just said, if you instantly start trying to shame someone who made a racist or misogynistic or vulgar comment, and you take away a job or a scholarship, throw them out of school, maybe that doesn't help. Some people, though, will say, hey, I think you should. I think that there should be consequences. Kurt Schilling is a dad. He responded to people talking about his daughter in a very strong way. Justine Sacco was a PR representative who lost a job for a single tweet that she thought was misunderstood. We're going to broaden the conversation about social media after this short break, and if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about the rate of C-section births. One of the nation's leading advocates for lowering the rate of C-sections is Dr. Gene DeClercq from Boston University. He's in Rochester today. He's with Connections next hour. We'll talk about why he wants to see the rate of C-sections go down and how to get there. Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
A new documentary has angered a controversial church.
I set out to make a film that I wanted to make, not the film that the Church of Scientology wanted to make.
The movie features members who left the church and lost their family.
I knew that they would be required to disconnect from me.
A look at the documentary later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
On Twitter, I'm at Evan Dawson on Twitter, and we've been hearing from a lot of people already, and here's David saying, dialogue, schmialogue, how about the response for these people is a swift kick in the backside? And I think some people, right, I mean, I think some people will view Imani's comments as overly generous, as saying if you could find out the people on Yik Yak talking about lynching, then you should just give them the boot. Though I tend to think Imani has the wiser and more generous approach, but I also understand people who are saying, kick him out. Here's Laura on Twitter. My son's college was in lockdown for an entire day because of two serious threats made on Yik Yak. You know, we hear stuff like that. Then you hear other people, John saying, can't see a single benefit of it. But then Alex says, we got a car towed out of the snow at RIT because of Yik Yak. So I don't know, Mike. Maybe there's a first beneficial thing I've heard about it. I guess.
Hey, I got free ice cream because of Yik Yak. Okay. You know, I mean, there's some good stuff there.
Okay. Howard says, I browse it every now and then online. I've seen the worst online, but it really allows people to be horrible. Mm-hmm. It's probably worse for students in college campuses. So, I'm trying to keep an open mind about this stuff. These platforms come out. I always feel like I'm the last to hear. Maybe Mary Ellen and I are... We do feel like it's a generational thing, and it's hard to keep up, I know.
Well, that one of the things, first of all, let me just say, I think you might think, we're an educational institution. I think sometimes when people are at a place of work, it might be different. I'm in agreement with Imani that we want to try to educate the people who have come to Brockport. Now, sometimes, as Imani said, if you take some steps and nothing works, then that's the time to let them out. And I believe there's one of the students at Oklahoma who made the racist comments.
Yes.
He's going out and apologizing and trying to, you know, whether that's effective or not, but he's trying to talk about what he did that was wrong and try to send that message. So sometimes you can do things like that. But you make a great point that sometimes the administration, as we're known, on the college campus, sometimes we're not, we have to rely on our communications department, but also being out there and talking to the students so that we know what's going on, what's in their lives, because there's so much that's media and messages coming to the students that they're dealing with. And if we're not in tune with that, I mean, I don't go on Yik Yak, but we need to know we have a responsibility to know what's going on, to monitor it, and to be thinking about how can we make sure that this tool is being used responsibly on our campus. And if it's not, do things like take back Yik Yak or work with students on providing some kind of tools to help them combat it. It's tricky.
I just want to add that I feel like education is the first step, but I also am not opposed to kicking people out of school either. I don't make that clear because I feel like some things is just there's a point where you should know better, especially when you're in college. You're between 18 and 22, and then if you're an adult student, you're older than that. So I feel like some cases I want to make that clear as a student.
No, I'm with you.
But sometimes I feel like that intervention can really help someone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that can set. I feel like that shouldn't, expulsion or suspension shouldn't always be that first step, but it definitely something that should always be considered at some point.
Keep it on the table, sure. Yeah. And so here's a couple of other cases that have some echoes of this in different ways. Kurt Schilling, former baseball player, whose 17-year-old daughter was accepted into the college that she wants to go to, and he jumped on Twitter to congratulate her. Well, I can't even find a single tweet in the category of the ugly stuff that he got that I feel comfortable reading. It was really, really ugly. But he actually narrowed it down to essentially the rape threats. That's how terrible it was. The comments about rape of his daughter, and he contacted people as best he could find them on Twitter, individually, emailing them, private messaging them, etc., demanding apologies. And most people, when you actually confront people for the terrible things that they say on social media, I think most people, when you stop them in their tracks, they realize how awful it was, or they're embarrassed, or they'll back down a little bit. Not always, but most people apologize. There were two men who did not, and Kurt Schilling decided, okay, you didn't apologize. Then I'm going to make this stick with you. And he contacted one of their employers, Sean McDonald, who worked part-time selling tickets for the New York Yankees. Sean McDonald lost his job. He was fired. Then Adam Nagel was a student, and Adam Nagel was a student on scholarship. Adam Nagel finds Kurt Schilling contacting the people who are at his school. He is suspended now. And Mike Johansson, some people are debating whether Kurt Schilling did the right thing. His own daughter, according to Kurt Schilling, he went home and she was sobbing, saying, you know, you're making this more public. And there was some dissension in their own family about what do you do. But Kurt Schilling said, I'm a dad. I'm drawing a line here. What do you make of it?
Yeah, and really that is that sort of gut check. You have to follow your own gut on these things. But, you know, one of the big debates in social media is it makes it very easy for people to act out in public anonymously or somewhat anonymously. And we might say that's somewhat excusable for people who are, you know, 14 or 15 or 16. I think it gets less and less excusable the older you get. You know, the recent instances locally of people posting inappropriate stuff, a couple of related to police and 911 center. You know, that's unbelievable to me. We're now in, if you count the year that Facebook started as the quote-unquote start of the social media age, which some people do, this is year 11, and people are still posting dumb stuff. Dumb is one thing. You know, hateful, racist, hurtful, that's another thing. And like you say, when people are confronted, most people will realize, oh, that's the way it came across. And it's the difference between written communication, spoken communication, and face-to-face. The further you get away from face-to-face, the fewer cues there are as to what the person's intention was. And so when you just see words, they can be interpreted. And, you know, people confronted, they absolutely, as you say, most of them will fess up.
Yeah, and I'm a dad, you're a dad. I get where Kurt Schilling was coming from that moment of anger. And so before I get to your phone calls, let me also say that response from Kurt Schilling has sparked a little bit of an interesting divide, though, as Mike Johansson noted on his own blog. He writes, his website is Fixitology. You have a blog there, and you did a great job. If you want to jump on Twitter, at Evan Dawson or at MikeJNY, we've both linked to that Mike's blog post. You kind of rounded up all of these issues in a very cogent way, and there was a response from Alyssa Rosenberg, who blogs about pop culture for the Washington Post's opinion section. And she wrote a piece called Why I Stopped Shaming Online Harassers. She asks, among other questions, what kind of speech should trigger consequences? Who gets to pass judgment? And here's what Mike writes about her. Quote, in a thoughtful summation of several instances of people who have been punished online, some for things they did and one because an ex-boyfriend impersonated an innocent woman, Rosenberg concludes, until we get a better handle on these precedents, I'll be sticking to my mute button rather than reaching for retweet to expose angry people to a wider audience, which might feel moved to chastise them. You know, so I heard a lot of people, Mike, saying, Kurt Schilling did the right thing. Go after these people. But Rosenberg saying, careful, because one dumb tweet, you can lose everything. And that may be too much.
Sure. And, you know, part of, I think it's American culture, maybe it's world culture because of Hollywood, but the whole vigilante thing is kind of appealing to people. This is something I can do something about. Because I can do something about it, I should do something about it. That's, in fact, the whole term digilante has come about in the last 3 years.
Digilante, I've never heard that.
And so digilantes, it's a big thing out there, but it's a very murky world. Shoot first, ask questions later has never been a great idea. And that's what happens sometimes in social media. Unless you are in possession of all the facts. I mean, I actually think Kurt Schilling, for the most part, did the right thing. He contacted the people.
And he gave them a chance to apologize. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, if I were counseling people, which I do sometimes, businesses, is first off, approach people. You know, point out what was hurtful or wrong or inaccurate. Give them a chance to respond. If they don't respond, then you have a choice to make. Is this person big enough, influential enough, have enough followers that it's important to really pursue them to get to the point of an apology or a takedown? Or is it better just to let it lie?
I think Kurt Schilling decided, I will do this even if they've got 10 followers, even if nobody's really listening to them, because I want to make an example that no matter who you are, it is not okay to make rape comments, to make misogynistic comments, to make racist comments, that there should be consequences. I think that's part of what he was doing. It has certainly sparked a conversation. Let's get to the phones, and we're going to start with Gary in Bloomfield. Gary, go ahead.
You know, while I do think that there's consequences are important, I think there's also the responsibility of the reader of the blog or the comment to recognize that anyone who is so cowardice that they can't put their name and identifying information on the statement isn't worth reading.
So you're saying that we should make a value judgment if we use social media, that if someone is hiding behind anonymity, don't listen to what they say no matter what they're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's easier said than done, but it is a good point, and I'm going to start with Mike. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, going way back, 20, 30 years, there was a big debate when the internet first started about should we be educating kids in school more on the philosophy of just because it's online doesn't make it right. Just because it's online shouldn't give it any more credibility. Just because it's online, we should check the source, check the validity of this source, make value judgments on, is this something I should pay attention to? And I don't know that debate has ever gone anywhere, but I know it was a big deal in the 90s.
Imani, what do you think?
I also think that's a really good point. The only issue is that, like, there's a lot of people in this country, and everyone in the country, the 40-some-odd million people in the country, 400-something-odd million people in the country, aren't going to not listen to someone just because they said it online. And we really have to understand the power of social media and how it really drives discourse. So, like, sometimes it really is important to check people because it's far-reaching, and it doesn't leave. Once it's online, it doesn't leave. So I feel that, although that's a great personal philosophy to have so that you don't really get caught up in it, I feel like on the aggregate, it's something that probably won't work as a large-scale philosophy, but I feel like as a personal philosophy, I think it's a great idea.
Well said. Marilyn, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Imani. I was thinking about it when you think about psychological theory, that if you want to get rid of a behavior, if you don't pay attention to it, it goes to extinction is what they say. And you would hope that would happen, but I think that the social media is just, it's so big, it's almost like you need to be out there as a counterbalance in some way. And I guess the other piece of this is being aware of reading these yik yaks and being aware of them. You kind of, it's an insight into some people, some few people, and it gives you an opportunity to try to think about, okay, there are people with these thoughts, you know, whatever they may be, and we need to hold them accountable if we can. Even if we can't find them, we need, what proactive things can we do to as citizens to try to educate people, to try to get them to think about what they're saying so that we can be a better society, even if it's just, you know, getting them to realize you can't just say whatever you want with, you know, thinking that it's not going to affect people.
Back to the phones. David in Pittsford. Go ahead, David.
Hi. I'd like to admit that I'm pretty narrow-minded about this sort of thing, but I'd like to propose that a college, before they admit a person, have in their application process a statement of their policies and principles, and then require every applicant to submit a handwritten paragraph describing their understanding and meaning of the college policies, with the understanding that they'll be expelled on the first violation. In my opinion, I believe that a person who exhibits this behavior, even if they apologize, will continue to believe it and exhibit this throughout the rest of their life, and these are the people who are going to be our corporate leaders, our government leaders, and so on, and we don't want them in there.
David, thanks for the call. I think that that idea is troubling, but I'm not sure it's right. And Mary Ellen, you've opened the door for the idea that if someone makes a comment, well, of course it's possible that they will never change, but I have to hope that we can change some of them.
I would hope that they would change. I understand what David's saying, and he really points to something that we've taken to heart at Brockport, which is that we need to look very closely and work very closely with our students as they come in their freshman year, making sure that in the orientation that they go through, the extensive orientation in their freshman seminar and freshman classes, that these issues, both about social media, but also about race relations, gender relations, things like that, that they have an opportunity to think about it, discuss it, so that if students are, you know, coming from backgrounds where they haven't interacted with a diverse population, some of those ideas will surface and we'll have an opportunity to get them to look at them critically, have discussions about it. But it is true, I think, that we need to address this very early on in their college careers. As an educator, I can't subscribe to the idea that people don't learn and evolve and change. I've seen too many examples where they do.
Well,
so.
And Imani, you've said it yourself. You hope that some people who say things, even throw up a racist yik yak comment, I know you hope they can change.
I honestly believe that people can change. I've seen it happen also just in the course of my years at school, me being an acquaintance with someone who says a lot of problematic things, and over the course of my time being friends with them, me showing them different things, them taking classes, have actually changed their point of view to the point of being problematic to being an ally. Like, I've seen that shift before. Although I also have seen plenty of people who will never change. So that definitely, like I said before, is always, unfortunately, it really is case by case. We can't come up with one general thing and apply it to everyone, because sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes you hear things and you think that it is okay to say them, and you've never learned that it is not okay. Mm-hmm. And when you learn that it's not okay, and when you learn why, it changes your whole worldview, and you're like, you know, you're sorry and you really want to help out and help other people change their point of views also.
Colin and Avon, you're next. Go ahead, Colin. Colin, I can barely hear you. Are you still there? All right, Colin, go ahead now. I think I can hear you now.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on the interesting phenomenon that when internet was first introduced, especially in academic settings, one of the biggest selling points was anonymity, because users were able to comment and have in-depth conversations on various topics, and they would not be judged by their background or their appearance or what have you. So I just wanted to know if there's any redeeming quality to the anonymity of the internet anymore, because it seems that it's turned into one of its biggest problems.
Colin, thank you. That's a very interesting comment, because I think the general idea that those who might feel hesitant to participate in a debate because of work or whatever it is, and want to participate, can do so online with the cloak of anonymity. And it is the trade-off that occasionally we can attack each other and hide behind anonymity. It's an interesting point, Mike Johansson. I'll start with you there. I tend to think that if you will not put your name and face on it, then don't expect people to listen to you. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, I'd agree with you. And what I would say is that the internet has evolved to the point where it is such a huge information gathering, you know, the so-called big data. When the internet first started, it was relatively easy to stay anonymous. I think today it's almost impossible. And I think that's just the reality. In fact, Jeff Jarvis of New York University talks about the end of privacy. He actually believes that the whole notion of us having privacy will be completely gone by 2020. And so anonymity, I think, can be useful in certain instances where people do want to feel unencumbered to have a intelligent, useful conversation. It can happen in small communities like a town that you live in and you want to talk about something that's very sensitive. I can see the value of that. But for the most part, I think anonymity is usually, like a lot of things, spoiled by the few who can't wait to use it to start throwing out garbage.
I agree. I think the side effect is too negative. Tim in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. First off, I feel terrible about the comments that are being made are awful. And secondly, I think my wife will wholeheartedly agree that at 36 years old, I wish I was as mature as Amani is.
I know. She's amazing. She
thank you.
I mean, you're making me look terrible here. I hope my wife is listening, but I kind of hope she's. But I, as a father, I somewhat admire Curt Schilling. Not a huge fan of his politics, but I can see going after these people and being upset. The issue is, and it off what Amani said, is he's not going to get an apology from everyone. It's just impossible. It's not going to happen. And what is he trying to do? Is he trying to get an apology, or is he trying to educate these people? Because he just went so far as to now ruin two other people's careers and lives.
And he's boasted about that, Tim. He has said, these guys, every time you Google their name, this is the first thing you will find, and it will haunt them. And he is happy about that.
Yeah, and I, you know, that's great for him, and I'm sure he gets something out of that. But what are these two kids or guys going to be like for the rest of their lives? Are they going to say, oh, you know what, I learned my lesson, I got fired? Or are they just going to be even more enraged, and like Amani said, they didn't really learn anything. Now they're just more upset.
Yeah, Tim, I
understand the apology part and the father part. I don't know how far you go.
Well, briefly, Tim, but I would just say I can't speak for Curt Schilling. I suspect he would say, yep, those guys probably ruined their lives by refusing to apologize, and now this will haunt them, but it will deter others from doing the same stuff.
Yeah, I see. I don't know. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden everyone else who's on social media said, you know what, I'm just not going to make comments like this anymore, because I'm sure within the next half hour you've got another who knows how many terrible comments somewhere else. So I don't know if it ever ends, really.
Yeah, well, I take the point. And Imani, he had some nice things to say about you. His point, though, is do you go after someone that hard? Real briefly, what do you think?
I'm torn because I'm definitely the type of person that I am. I'm definitely the kind of person that if someone makes a comment like that, everything stops and I immediately tell them what they did and why it's wrong. And I'm also kind of a fan of shaming, but then also not, because I understand the long lasting effects of it. So at first it's just like, yes, this person is really facing consequences for what they say, but then the consequences go on and on and on, where it's like, sometimes you don't know, and sometimes even if you are like this horrible human being and just spewing all these things, who gives us the right to really destroy someone's life also? Although in my own heart of hearts, I'm just like, yes, this horrible human being is facing consequences, but then in the same breath, it's like, who made me a judge? So
yeah, I'm with you. Our phones, every line is blowing up again, and our hour is almost over. Look what you've all sparked a conversation. And so if you're on the line and I can't get you, I apologize, but obviously this is something we need to stay with in many ways. I didn't even get to discuss Justine Sacco, the remarkable story. Google Justine Sacco. Read the story, how one stupid tweet ruined someone's life. Read that whole story. Mike Johansson, real briefly, as Mike has linked to it, her tweet, she was a PR rep for an internet company, 180 followers. She's traveling to South Africa, and she tweeted, going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white. And 11 hours later, when she landed, one of the leading Twitter themes was, has Justine landed yet? She was super nuclear, followed around the world, because one person retweeted it, then 10 more did, then 10 more, and everyone thought she was saying something really, really racist. She has explained, and I think she probably justifiably explains, that she was making a joke, a bad one, about white privilege, about how ignorant white people don't realize how good they tend to have it and the advantages that come with that. But she did it in a very ineloquent way. She lost her job. She lost relationships with her family. She basically went into hiding for a while. And Mike, in 20 seconds, I think everyone should read that story. What do you think?
I absolutely. In fact, you should read the follow-up about the Gawker writer. I'm just reading his name here. Sam, I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, the Gawker writer who first retweeted her,
yes,
got an invite to take dinner with her. Went and met her. He was nervous about this. Thought he was going to get lambasted. It turned out she was very gracious.
He liked her.
He liked her a lot, and he felt initially awkward about that. But it all worked out for the best. And he said, she's a different person. The world's a different place, and it all worked out for the best.
Read Mike's blog post about it. I've linked to it on our Twitter account. And let's keep the conversation going in the future. Let me thank Mary Ellen Zuckerman, the provost of the College of Brockport. Keep us posted at this, but also congratulations on just the way you've handled this. And for the most part, you're so many impressive students that you do have. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Imani Lawrence, Brockport student, founder of the movement. Unfortunately for you, I'm going to keep calling you because you were very impressive this hour.
Thank you,
Imani. Mike, always good to talk to you. Mike Johansson is a social media strategy consultant and a lecturer at RIT. Thanks, Mike.
Great to be here.
Short break and back with another hour of Connections next.